Oh, well, hello there. You just caught me in a little bit of light reading about the darkness of humanity in the Black Book of Communism. You might be asking yourself, is that a cup of North Arrow coffee? No, no, it's not, because I drank all of my North Arrow coffee. And I'm here to talk to you about how you can get a discount on North Arrow coffee with the promo code Solomon. I just interviewed Rob Mitt, and it was an awesome interview, and you guys have been waiting for it. And now I've got a promo code to give you, Solomon. Promo code Solomon. In the link in the description below. You do that, you support us, and you support Rob Mitt and North Arrow Coffee. So get yourself some coffee, sit down, and enjoy this interview on coffee, religion, and several other things that I can't remember at this moment. But it was great, and I had a blast. So get yourself some coffee. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Solomon's Corner Podcast. A place for thinkers. Join us as we explore the depths of theology, philosophy, and the Christian intellectual life.
Welcome to the Solomon's Corner Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Roberts. Today we are doing an interview with Rob Mitt of North Arrow Coffee, or at Pro Life Coffee on Twitter. Make sure you give him a follow. You can also use our promo code Solomon whenever you buy any of their coffee and help them out and help us out at the same time. Rob is a really awesome guy. I've gotten a little bit of time to talk to him before we got the show started. I'm really excited about this. And so if you're into saving babies and drinking coffee, you're going to like this interview. So let's welcome Rob onto the screen. It's weird saying that because it's like, you know, we don't have like a stage or anything. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking like late night. But this is Rob Mitt. So welcome to the show, Rob.
How's it going?
That's going pretty good. And we know that it's going pretty good because we just talked for 15 minutes before we got on here.
Yep. That's right.
But anyway, so before we get started onto the coffee and stuff, just tell people a little bit about yourself, you know, how you got into coffee, you know, your veteran background, you know, how did this whole thing kind of like converge?
So the North Arrow story, I guess, kind of starts a few years back. I was working at a manufacturing company, and one of the very few conservative Christians on the office staff there. And one day this other dude shows up carrying a military looking satchel, not a purse. And, you know, like my spidey senses go up. I'm like, this guy looks like he's my people. So, I just ask him, like, hey man, did you serve? And he's like, yep. Turns out he was an Army Ranger. I was a Marine. And that was the beginning of mine and my business partner, DJ's, relationship. This was back in 2018. Yeah. So, at the time I was really beginning my coffee journey of enjoying, you know, specialty grade quality coffees. I just gotten out of construction, so there was no more Folgers Black Silk. And I'm working in an office next to, like, just down the block from a specialty grade roaster, and we're getting great coffee every day. So I was, my appetite was being tickled for coffee.
Yeah. So you don't like the frou-frou drinks, right?
What's that?
You don't like the frou-frou drinks, like the mocha frappuccinos? And
no,
you
know. I have a pretty wide wide palate. Yeah. Yep. My daily coffee is normally a black cafe Americano, or a nice, you know, medium roast or a light roast single origin that I do in my pour over. But I really haven't met a lot of coffee drinks that I don't like. That being said, I do eat NSNG, which is no sugar, no grain. So I don't have those sweet drinks very often. Okay, but when I'm off the wagon, I go for a nice wrap. Yeah.
I always get a kick of that. You know, Jack Carr, he wrote in the Terminal List that James Reese is like a kind of like a frou-frou coffee drinker. He's like got like cream and honey and stuff. And apparently that's because that's how Jack Carr is. And he drinks some pretty wimpy coffee, which I thought was funny because, you know, people think military, you know, they think like, I don't drink coffee, I drink dirt and water, you know. But anyway. So continue.
True story.
So you get in touch with all this specialty roasting, and then what?
Well, you just reminded me of something. I'll back up to the very origin of my coffee journey. Was actually in the military, and we were this was years ago. This had to have been 2004, where in California or 29 Palms, wherever that is, getting ready to go to Iraq. We're out there for a month doing training, and we were pulling a couple of all-nighters, and there was this one crusty old sergeant. He's just like the typical like movie character sergeant that you would expect. And he pulls out a trash can, a sock, and a can of like Maxwell House coffee. we get a fire going in the desert, right? And we're boiling water, and he fills the sock with coffee grinds. There was a dedicated sock, I will say that, for coffee. And he starts like steeping it, making this coffee tea in the field. And he's like, this is how we're going to stay awake. I was like, all right, I'll try it. That was it. That was the first time I drank coffee. And after that, I was a coffee drinker for life.
But, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, that is a origin story. I mean, you could write like you could mythologize that pretty well. Like, you know, like you were like going out in the desert and then you came across this old wizard and he pulled out his sock and put coffee grounds in it. And then you suddenly felt the essence come in and you had all these superpowers and you went and decided to make your own coffee.
I think we're going to make our first commercial out of that story.
That would be so awesome.
So DJ and I, you know, started, you know, meeting regularly around a nice French press, a good coffee. And that led to conversations. Coffee always leads to good conversations, even with adversaries. I feel like it's just a great medium for getting people to a table. And very often, you know, we talk about faith, we talk about business ideas. We're both self-described serial entrepreneurs where we've owned or led several different business initiatives throughout our lives. And we'd also very often end up on the pro-life topic. And our question that we'd always pose to each other was, how do we reconcile being men who are trained and men who swore an oath, but now who are men of God?
Right.
And the fact that this scourge exists in our society. And we really never had any answers to that question. But we did very often say, well, it's not violence. We know that's not the way to cross. So fast forward a few years to December of 2020. I'm no longer working at that company anymore. Mm-hmm. And we're just talking on a phone. And there was a certain coffee company that kind of upset a lot of the veteran community by essentially alienating their base. And him and I were talking about that. And I said, why don't we just like start our own coffee company and say, hey, this is who we are. Our values are, you know, who we are, and make a simple pledge to our customers that we're going to be authentic and in presenting our brand and presenting our values. And we're not going to try to rope you in and then, you know, make you feel like you bought snake oil. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I like it. Let's do it. And I started doing some research into how we can get started up. And a few days later, one morning in prayer, I was reading through Revelation. I got to get the scripture ready for these interviews. I can't even remember what specific chapter.
That's the worst. It's like, I have this inspiration from the Bible. Yeah, sure you do. Sure you do. You don't remember. The trolls will get you.
And it was a moment, too, where whatever I was reading, it really just reminded me of the children who have suffered as a result of this. Mm. And it just became very clear to me that if we were going to do this business, this was going to be the hill that we would fight on. Because of my past relationship with DJ and our conversations. So I typed out our rough draft of our mission statement that's on our website. It's been edited a little bit because my grammar is horrible, but okay. I sent it over. I'm like, Hey man, I feel like we're serious about this business idea. We'd talked about dozens prior to that, never pursued anything. And if I'm going to do this, this is it. This is the only way I'm doing it. And he texted me back. He's like, yeah, I'm on board. Let's go for it. So that was December of 2020. And we got to work. We found our roasting partner. And we can get into that if you want, talk a little bit about them. And we got our website going. And by March of last year, we were operational. We were live and selling coffee.
That is awesome. And real quick, now would be a good time to show the website, because I think your website is really awesome. Lindsay, can you pull that up real quick just so people can see it? And so this is their website. Make it big so that people can see the whole thing, like the plus sign on there. You just hit the plus sign, the green button, the green button, top left corner, or it might be top right in the browser. Yep. It's okay. Women don't know how to use computers or guns. I'm just joking. Nowadays, those jokes go a lot further, you know. But I think your website is awesome. So now, for people that don't know, it says, you know, you donate at least 15% of sales to pro-life initiatives and stuff. Does that mean that you guys have like promos and stuff where you'll do more, or like, because there's the at least, but like you have this 15% thing. So is it everything that people buy? Like, explain, you know, how this helps the pro-life movement.
So the audio got broken up a little bit there, but I think I got the gist of your question.
Yeah.
If I don't answer it, fire back. But yeah, so the at least 15% is, I don't know why we started with at least 15%, and it's not like we're just going to cap it at 15.1%, right. But we just want to be open to whatever it is that we feel is right to do with the business. So for 2022, we actually donated about 18.5%.
Wow.
Of our sales. Yeah. The pro-life organizations that we seek out are, it's not just any pro-life organization. This may offend some people, but we're not looking to partner with like secular pro-life organizations. Mm-hmm. I think it's great that people outside of the faith are pro-life, and I encourage them to keep with that. Yeah. But as far as our personal convictions and faith and values, it's important that the organizations that we donate to are gospel-centric in the sense that they're not only advocating for the child, but they're actually ministering the gospel to the family, the mom, the dad, whoever it is. Because I believe that should be at the core of preaching the gospel and discipleship are like the two things that should be at the core of all Christian functions. Right. And if we're going to run a Christian business, then I feel like that's probably, you know, two of the requirements that we're going to have for donating to organizations.
Well, and I think the other thing is I was reading Eric Little. Do you know who Eric Little is? He was a runner. Do you know who he is? There's a little bit of a delay, but do you know?
I haven't heard his name.
Okay. Do you remember the movie Chariots of Fire? Did you ever see that movie?
I've heard of it. Never watched it.
Okay. That's all right. I was a track athlete. So this is like my wheelhouse.
Crashing the kid.
Yeah. It's like if people ask me about like, you know, Eisenhower, I'm like, I think I remember who that is. You know, like that's not my wheelhouse, you know. But he was a runner who wouldn't run on Sunday. He was this famous runner who, like, because it was the Sabbath, he wouldn't run or whatever. But anyway, I was reading this biography, and this relates because he got such a fan base that he started getting the, and this was 1924. Okay, so this is back in the day. And this girl who's like 13 wants to start a fan club. And they come up with all these, what we would say are pretty audacious rules. Like they have to write poetry about him. They have to have a picture of him on their wall, you know, like all this kind of stuff. And if you don't do that, you get kicked out by order of the committee, you know? And it was just funny to me because I was telling my brother, I was like, it seems like to me, there's just this sense that you can't actually have any parameters on your groups and your clubs anymore because everybody's like, oh man, well, you're being so exclusive. Well, no, it's because like I can only hit one target. Okay. Like, I mean, like I can't hit all the targets out there. Like I have to be focused in my mission, which I have noticed athletes and military guys actually understand. Like they understand this idea of, well, I can't run the 100, the 200, the 300, the 400, the 500, you know, well, those aren't actual, well, it depends. If you get in the indoor races, then those might be events, but you can't run them all. You got to pick your event. You got to specialize for that. And then you try to be the best that you can. And you don't worry about the other events. So I totally think that's cool because again, it's on mission and it keeps you guys focused on what you're doing. And you know, you can let other people, you know, support those other groups. And then hopefully somebody else does come along. And you know, that's I think makes total sense. So you've mentioned your faith a little bit. So what, how'd you become a Christian? Like, do you want to share that a little bit? Like what is your kind of faith story in a nutshell?
Man, that's, so
is that, I mean,
I was raised. Yeah. That's a novel right there.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to keep it succinct, for the purpose of time, but I was raised Presbyterian and I went to Catholic school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I had, I don't want to offend any of my brothers and sisters out there. So I want to choose my words carefully. I felt like growing up, I had a very, very good dose of religion that was absent of discipleship and depth.
Yeah.
So I knew all the things, right? I knew all the songs. I knew all the scriptures. I knew all the sacraments. I had all that, but I didn't have faith.
Yep.
And as I, you know, as I became a teenager, obviously, you know, there's certain things that lure you. First of which was heavy metal music, man. I just went, like, I heard it and I was like, oh, that's awesome. I'm going for that. And I became so convinced that I could never live up to any holy standard. So I was like, well, this is it. I'm going to hell in a handbasket. So I might as well just make the most of this life. And I lived wild for, you know, my adolescence into my early 20s, probably into my late 20s. I just lived wild, man. Being in the Marine Corps, you know, that even that culture, it's like it's like pouring gasoline on a fire, you know, because if you're not in the field training, you're surrounded by alcohol and parties and all that stuff. And even if you are in the field training, you know, there's always that guy sneaking in a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Right.
So I was living crazy. And then I was in Okinawa, Japan, the year I was stationed out there, the year that The Passion of the Christ came out.
Oh, wow.
You know, which is interesting because even though I went to Catholic school, I never considered myself a Catholic. I was really raised in a Protestant Presbyterian family. So that was always what that's what my dog tag says, Presbyterian or Protestant. And even as a kid, I hated this idea of denominations. Like it didn't seem to fit with what I read in the scriptures. So anyway, I saw The Passion of the Christ and I got wrecked when I watched that movie. I think I was 21 or 22 years old at this point, and I became so aware of the reality of Jesus and who he was, that he actually not only was God, but was fully man, that he took on this horrific punishment that he did not deserve. And I walked out of that theater, you know, just like snot and tears,
and
knowing that this could not be for nothing. And that was it. That was all I knew of the gospel, right? Which isn't the complete gospel. After that, my girlfriend at the time convinced me to do an Alpha course. And Alpha is like kind of like this apologetic.
Our church has
for
one.
The Bible. Yeah, it's. I think it's really good. Great for. Yeah, everyone hates the term seeker friendly. Alpha is extremely seeker friendly, and it's a good thing.
Exactly. It's evangelistic. That's what we used to call it. It was just evangelism. Now everybody's like, well, we don't want you to think that we're trying to get you to commit to anything. But do you want to say a prayer?
Exactly. So I did the Alpha course, and then like this, then there was more faith, and I walked away from that convinced that the scriptures were authentic and accurate. Then like 2 or 3 months later, going to this little Pentecostal church. And so I've gone now from Presbyterian, which is like Calvinism, to to Catholicism, to a movie made by a Catholic, you know, like the British Orthodox Church or whatever. Like I'm just getting like everything dumped on me. Now I'm in this Pentecostal church and people are like speaking in tongues. I'm just like, what is this madness? You know? But I had an encounter, man. And the truth of the gospel became so real to me in this church that that I actually could be forgiven, that this was real. Like it all just kind of came down there. And this man grabs me and he preaches the gospel to me. And I turn to him, I'm like, but you don't know what I've done in life. And he preaches the gospel again, and like boom, it worked. Like it made sense. Something not just in here, but something in here shifted. I just knew right then and there. I knew that I was a Christian. I knew who Jesus was. Didn't have immediate life transformation. I'm not one of those, you know, overnight. I didn't really. I probably still blasted Pantera pulling out of the church parking lot that Sunday.
But
that was kind of my origin story of, you know, where my relationship with the Lord and my walk with the Lord really started.
I think it's also very cool because it shows, I think God's definitely prepared you for what you're doing, because all of those groups that you mentioned all care about the pro-life movement to one degree or another. And they also like coffee. So, you know, you're pretty much, you know, God definitely knew the works that he had prepared for you, you know, but I also on a more serious note, I think that I've mentioned this to people before, and also on our I think I've said it on our podcast. Well, if not, here you go. First time. is that, you know, our generation, you know, whether that's millennial or Gen X, I don't know how old you are, and I won't ask you on air, but in general, you know, what the era of the internet really ended up bringing into everybody's kind of religious framework or their Christian framework, all these other denominations that they normally would have never experienced, right? They would have heard about through the preacher that they had always gone to hear with mom and dad or whatever. But like, I don't know anybody. I grew up in Michigan. I don't know anybody that stayed where we grew up. They all moved, went somewhere else, and had to find a church. And a lot of people just started going to the churches that they heard about, not because of the denomination that they were in, but because somebody from work invited them. Oh, I really like this church. It's really nice, you know, or whatever. And if they were like me, you know, small town guy going to a big, big city, it's like, well, they've got this huge church over here. It's awesome. Lasers and stuff. And you're like, what? You know, you've never heard this. You're like, man, I should at least check it out. It's like Carowinds or like Cedar Point. You got to just like go one time just to say, well, those are Midwestern references and Southern. So like Disney World.
I've been to Cedar Point.
Oh, okay. There we go. Yeah. All right. We're good. It's like, you got to go one time. You got to ride the top thrill dragster, you know, hit that 420 foot drop. I only know that because I just showed my kids the video like a couple weeks ago. They were like, what? There's a 420 foot roller coaster. Anyway, sidebar. But the point is that everybody ended up starting getting exposed to these denominational people, and they met godly people in them too. And you know, a lot of these tropes of there's nobody good in that denomination. It's like, then you like find yourself like in a real deep, dark moment. And, you know, I grew up Protestant, and, you know, a Catholic person comes along, for example, and just like, is like, I'm going to pray for you. And you're like, well, you're not supposed to be a Christian. <You know? laughs> And then it's like, you know, the flip side, it's like, you know, you find Catholics saying, you know, this Protestant told me, well, that didn't happen very often, you know, at least as much as it does now. Like the testimonies now, I think, are a lot more like yours and mine, because mine is kind of similar. I grew up, you know, Protestant, did all this stuff, found myself in the Anglican church. That's where we're at now. So like, there's like parallels, but you know, I've had people speak words over me, things like that, you know, like things that were totally taboo growing up. And I think it just speaks to two things, that, you know, the body of Christ, obviously, but also that there's actually like that metaphor of war. I keep thinking about that, especially with the culture issues and things like that. A lot of Christians will think of their faith journey as like this kind of linear, you know, ascension kind of a thing. But in actuality, it's probably more like a board game of Risk, where there's these like, you know, borders there's these mountains and valleys and stuff. And some people are going over here. They're moving north because that's where they've got to go and fight the battle that God's called them to fight. And others are going over here. I'm not trying to preach relativism, just to be very clear. Rob, I know you don't know me, so I just want to make sure I'm not a relativist. But at the end of the day, I think it's more along the lines of when Paul uses that description of, you know, we don't battle against flesh and blood, but the principalities of darkness. I think this helps explain a lot of the diversity in people's recognition of Christ as the one who takes away sin and actually brings people to a fuller life and to God. And you've got this strategy that's going on, that God is working in his perfect will. And it's not this linear thing. It's like, nope, we're going down to the valley. We're going up over the mountains. We got to go rescue these people, you know? And so I like to think of that in those terms, partly because I wish I would have done military stuff, and I have tons of respect for the military community. I always feel like I'm like a little brother in their presence. Like, I don't know how to do this. Wait, you guys have at least 50 more milliliters of testosterone, like if that's even the unit of measure. But anyway, that is a great, great story. Real quick. So like you said, you were a serial entrepreneur. Why did you start with coffee and not something else? Like, is it just because you really like coffee, or did it just kind of fall in your lap? I mean, you kind of alluded to it with your friend DJ and stuff, but
yeah.
Why coffee and not something else?
So man, there's so many things that I've been good at and passionate about, you know, whether it be work or hobbies. My first business was a construction company, which became a heavy a heavy marine construction company, meaning dock building and bulkheads and all that stuff.
No way.
Which then kind of transformed into a, yeah, which transformed into a project management company, which then became a consulting company. Like, it just changed all these times. Wow. Over the years. A lot of the time there was other things that I was very close to kicking off. You know, at one point I was going to buy a bait and tackle shop, and, you know, it was a shop in my community that was for sale, and I knew the family that owned it, and I probably would have done really well with that. But for whatever reason, we got to the point of like, all right, is this what we're doing? Yay or nay? And we're like, nah, okay. You know, move on to something else. So I think the initial conversation about the coffee company was for a few years, I've kind of said, I want to have my hands in a coffee company. I didn't necessarily want to own it. I didn't necessarily want to become a roaster or open a cafe. If I did open a cafe, I just wanted to be an owner. I didn't want to be an operator. I wanted to have other people, right, you know, do the day to day. And then when DJ and I talked in December, you know, we just kind of said, hey, let's just start our own company. You know, again, this wasn't the first company that we talked about, but when we actually started looking at the business model, we realized there was going to be a low barrier to entry, and there was almost no risk involved with,
right.
I mean, the risk was the $400 we spent on Shopify to get our website up and running.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah. And that was it. So it was low barrier to entry. It was something that I was already passionate about, something that was part of the glue that, you know, is part of me and DJ's, you know, friendship. And it just seemed to make sense, you know. It was easy.
Yeah.
In a sense, it's been hard work, but it was still easy to get going.
Yeah. So so that leads me to another question that some people have, which kind of falls into this, you know, we were talking about the Daily Wire, Louder Crowder thing prior to this, but we're in this, what I've called a culture war, that like, you do have to have a mindset that we're in a war. It's just not a hot war. It is a war. there are strategic positions. There are, strategies that are involved for those who are basically saying, and I don't mean this in a Gnostic sense, like a secret knowledge. I mean this in like, the Grammys just had a satanic ritual. Okay. So like,
yeah,
if you don't see that you're in a war and you're going to have to pick a side soon, like, I don't know what to tell you. Okay. Maybe, you know, go talk to a Catholic about purgatory, see what they say. Anyway, but the point is that, you know, you're going to have to, you know, decide how you're going to fight this thing. And that involves, you know, decisions. Like when we were just getting started, you know, I work in the tech field and stuff. And so I had followed Shopify for a while, and, yep, you know, they banned firearm sellers back in 2018. And, you know, when I was getting ready to start Solomon's Corner and try and encourage people, for those that don't know, we try to encourage people in the intellectual life, according to a Catholic thinker, actually, Sir Talange there. And we're going to have swag and things like that for people who feel like God's gifted them to live an intellectual life in writing and thinking and all that fun stuff, because a lot of people out there just don't get that kind of encouragement. But the point is, we had to figure out a shop. And it's, yep, like, well, we don't have a business loan. I mean, hi, Mr. Banker, I have a business idea. You know, it's like, it's not going to work great for getting a loan of like $500,000 to start a storefront. And so, like, you know, Shopify is like, I mean, we got up and running to where we could take sales super fast, but we also knew, well, maybe they don't necessarily align with our mission and vision, yep, or like the YouTube censorship, you know, everybody's like, well, you shouldn't, you know, play with YouTube, you know, blah, 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 all these kinds of things. So how do you guys view, you know, that line of, you know, we're gonna make a compromise here for us to get to the next mile marker? Like, how do you help people understand,
yeah,
that aspect of doing business in this culture war?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this is something that we're constantly thinking about and talking about. You know, again, DJ and I are in this conversation.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, what does it really mean to be a pro-life business? Mm-hmm. So, and you know what, not everyone's going to like my response here, but this is where we are today. Right now, North Arrow Coffee Company could not exist off of the Shopify platform.
It just
couldn't.
Right.
And there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. Some of them are technology issues. The things that the parallel economy or alternate economy, whatever you want to call it, needs to exist autonomously, apart from this, you know, this cultural system, they're not out there yet. Now, right. there's so many people working hard to build them, and that's that's awesome. Like, we need other entrepreneurs, and Andrew Torb is a great example. Love him or hate him, he's working on not just you know, Gab is one thing, but he's also working on infrastructure. He's my understanding is that he sees that challenge that you can't operate. You simply cannot operate without touching some of these problematic points. If it's not Shopify, you're still touching AWS somewhere. Yep. You're still touching 100%. Google somewhere. So it's 100% unavoidable.
Yeah.
So if we're going to take a hardline approach and be like, absolutely not, no way, no how, then we can't have a business, and we can't, and we wouldn't be able to have the impact that we've had already. So that's number one. So there's not a hard line, it's a blurred line, and we've kind of taken on a where we can, right, where we can approach. So where can we fully integrate our values? Well, first, supply chain, right?
Yeah.
We partnered with a coffee roaster that is they're not necessarily doing pro-life work, but they're a Christian family. They founded their coffee company based on running a Christian mission in Kenya that was providing education for people there. And they support our vision, right? So boom, that's a big win. Our bank, we bank with, is it right if I drop their name on here?
That's fine, yeah.
We bank with Adelphi, it's ADELFI Credit Union. Again, it's a values, Christian, faith-based bank. It's an alternative bank that's able to support Christian nonprofits, individual banking, as well as businesses like ours.
Is that the guy?
You're thinking of Pro Life Bank. It's okay. Not off the ground yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's that bank, the Nick Vitulik.
Pro Life Bank was our first choice, but they weren't operational when we needed a bank last year. I think we have a great relationship with Adelphi, and we'll probably stay with them.
Yeah.
Had Pro Life Bank been ready to go a year ago, it would have been a no brainer for us.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
And there are other. So anywhere that we can engage with a values aligned organization, we do.
Yep.
Other things. It's like, I don't like, we use Uline for our shipping boxes. I don't know what Uline's values are, honestly.
Right.
And I don't necessarily have the time to research every single thing that we're doing.
Right.
Yeah. But I have to have shipping boxes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, and again, it comes back to that kind of that objective based business approach, right? It's, what is your mission? It's like, I started North Arrow Coffee so that I could make millions and billions of dollars at the expense of everybody else. It's like, okay, well, maybe that's going to inform your business decisions a little bit. But if your objective is, I started North Arrow Coffee because I want to help the unborn, well, then of course that's going to inform your decisions. You know, I have a master's in philosophy, and one of the things that we always talk about is what's the end of your action, or what's the goal of your action? And, you know, a lot of people just don't think this way anymore. But the point is that, you know, if you don't have a purpose, then you can't actually make decisions that are intentional because you don't actually have a purpose that you're intending. And so you have to have these goal-oriented models, because that is what helps you, number one, understand, okay, well, probably what matters more is the bank I go with versus my shipping box, right? Like, I need to make sure that the bank is values aligned, because what happens if the shipping container company cancels you? Okay, well, got to find another one. All right. Well, what if the bank cancels you? Oh, well, now you're in a real pile of doo-doo, right? I mean, now you've got a problem. Yes. And even still, like you said, like, the infrastructure is coming with e-commerce stuff. I think more people are getting into that. I know I've been contacted by people about projects, you know, to try and, you know, compete in this arena. And I think that that people understand this, and especially, I mean, the market indicators are there. It's just, we need the investors to be there, because, I mean, you go to Rotten Tomatoes, it's like, hey, investor, I don't know if you see this, but this means that you can make a lot of money if you just make a movie with a dude like Rob Mitt with a gun that goes in and saves his family. That's all you got to do. And you'll make a ton of money. It's like, yep. Rotten Tomatoes will hate you, but you'll be fine. But no, that makes a lot of sense. So I did actually have a kind of coffee nerdy question for you. I consider myself a coffee connoisseur, but I base it a lot on labels. Like, as far as like, you know, how does the bag look? I like the marketing and stuff. But now, you know, but obviously I'm values oriented, because once I found out about your guys' stuff, I was like, I'll get this pro-life coffee. And I was like, but it's probably like most Christian businesses, you know, they're principled, but it sucks. And then I got it and I was like, man, this is super good. This is really good. In fact, we were going to have the bag, but we drank it all. And by the way, we order a lot of pro-life coffee because we drink a ton of coffee. So like, you know, disclaimer, we were with a certain outfit that has a rifle in their coffee. And then I found your stuff and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to switch to this guy. And then, you know, we get like, I think our order is like, what is it, Lindsay? Like 12, 24 pounds.
No,
what
is it? No, 24 pounds. No.
24 pounds. Discount on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, we order 4 pounds a month.
There we go. 4 pounds. So we killed
just the two of us.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
We killed it off. Yeah. Yeah.
I think you're outdoing me.
So yeah. We killed it off. 2 weeks, a week and a half in advance of our next shipment.
It's not sustainable, but we're hoping that eventually we'll get to a point where we don't need that much coffee to do work and Solomon's Corner. But yeah, so, and we don't always drink it though. Yeah, but we don't always drink it all.
It's a pound a week. Okay.
Yeah, we don't always drink it all though, because like the thing is like, you know, once you get your ratio right for like 8 cups, it's hard to be like, I really just need 1 cup. I'm going to take a risk and try and measure it out the right way, and then you're like, no, but I know 8 cups will work for one. And so then, you know, you end up, you know, we're not exactly green in our coffee drinking, let me just put it that way.
Pro tip.
Yeah, there you
pro
go
tip. Don't change your recipe.
That's right.
Brew your eight cups.
That's
right. The extra in a mason jar and throw it in the fridge for iced coffee.
Yes, there you go. That's what you
that's
like
what
iced
I do.
Coffee. I do like iced coffee. I should be
doing that. Make ice cubes with it. Make coffee ice cubes, which make better iced coffee, because then your iced coffee doesn't get watered down.
Man alive. Here we are talking about the culture war, and we could all be better drinkers of coffee. You know? I mean, like, this is great.
I actually discovered a new coffee drink last night scrolling through Instagram. This guy made a coffee drink called an Aero Americano or something. And what he did was he simulated a nitro cold brew using his espresso machine. So he pulls a shot of espresso, he puts it into ice water, the same way you would make an iced Americano, and then he froths it with his steam wand, which aerates the coffee, and it gets a nice, like, man, you ever had Guinness? You know, like the nice head you get on Guinness?
Yeah.
Gives a nice head with all the bubbles in the bottom. And I just discovered this morning, and I made one. That was my first coffee today. And then I went back and made the same thing again, but I made it hot. And it was awesome.
Wow.
always playing around with new coffee drinks and new methods of brewing.
That is legit.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I was wondering, because I don't know what single origin means. I know that it's like it's a thing. But for myself and all the listeners out there who already know, I know that you're out there, but I don't know. Can you educate me?
I love doing some basic coffee education.
Okay.
So I would break it down like this. There's probably three types of coffee that you're getting in your bag. You're gonna get single origin, you're gonna get a blend, or you're gonna get a post roast blend. Okay. Which could be a single origin or a blend.
Gotcha.
All right, so that makes a lot of sense. A single origin is when the beans in that bag, the beans that were in that roast, come from one single place.
Gotcha.
Now it could be a region. It could be multiple farms in the same region. It could be an individual farm. So like our coffee of the month right now is a single origin coffee that's only coming off of one farm in Guatemala.
Oh, wow.
Our cold brew is coming from the Chiapas region of Mexico. It's sourced from several different farms that produce the same type of coffee with the same flavor profile, but it's all coming from the same region. Therefore, it's single origin. Gotcha. When you get into blends, a general blend is blending coffee from multiple origins, multiple regions to create a specific flavor profile. All right.
Yeah.
Then the last one is the post-roast blend, which is essentially when you're blending together different levels of roast for the same thing, you're creating a flavor profile. So maybe somebody really likes the bitterness of a dark roast, but they don't want it full bitter. They might go with a medium roast and do like a 70-30 blend of medium and dark coffee, which adds complexity to the cup, or it smooths the cup out, stuff like that.
Wow. Well,
clear as mud?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I was wondering about origin, which I guess being a philosopher, I should have been able to put those two together, right? Single origin.
Yeah.
But what does it mean? You know?
So
what place? Some
people are like hardline single origin only. I tend to gravitate towards that because it's like this purist mentality of like, this is the most authentic way to get a cup of coffee. But I think blends are great. If you have a really good coffee roaster who understands flavor and can pick apart cups, they work hard to create blends that cup really well.
Yeah.
So our espresso is a blend. It's not a single origin espresso roast. It's a blend of coffees from different regions, Central America and I believe Africa, that creates a really nice cup of espresso.
Yeah.
And the master roaster who put that blend together is really talented. They did a great job of making that.
Well, cup and well. It was one of those, that's one of the ones we order. And I had tried it with my creamer and honey, and I was like, this doesn't taste right. And then I like tried it black and I was like, oh man, that's good. And I was like, I messed up. This is like one of the first cups of coffee I've messed up. You know what I mean? It's like, usually if it's Starbucks, it's like, all right, come on. Okay. Come on. Get some life in there. You're like putting sugar in it. Like you're trying to do CPR, you know, on the coffee just to give it a little bit of life. But anyway, so
certain coffees are going to be really good in a pour over. I would not put my espresso roast in a pour over, but I'll use it to pull espresso all day long.
Okay.
So, and that's another thing is some roasters they'll roast a bean in order to make it fit a wide variety of applications. So whether you pour over French press, espresso, drip, it's going to taste good. And then some are like, no, this works really good in a pour over. And if you try to run that through an espresso machine or a mocha pot, it's going to taste horrible. But if you run in a pour over, it's going to score 86 on the specialty grade scale, which means it's really good coffee.
No way. I did not know that. Because we were using drip, and then we switched to a Chemex because our coffee pot caught on fire and started to actually and it wasn't because we were, you know, we weren't doing anything crazy with it. You know, we weren't trying to like, we're not engineers over here trying to make it to the moon with our coffee pots. But what were you going to say, Lindsay? You were about to say something.
Nothing. I was just going to clarify. We also weren't trying to brew meth in the old pot.
Yeah, that's true.
Like that.
Yeah.
No carafe.
Yeah. There were no alternative approaches, you know. But
good on you guys.
Right. You know, just trying to stay on a straight and narrow. So anyway, so we switched to this Chemex. And I will say this, that we do the espresso in a pour over, but it tasted a lot better. But that's because we were also using it in a crappy like drip coffee maker. The bloom on your guys' coffee is unreal. Like that was one of the things I was like,
it just
goes up. It looks like a small nuclear explosion in the pour over. It's just like, and then it's like. And I'm like, wow,
that's because the color, I feel like this is like becoming a plug, but I guess it is, right?
Yeah. We are trying to sell your coffee.
Roasted to order.
Okay.
Yeah. So the coffee's roasted to order, which means it's not getting pulled off a shelf and shipped out to our customers. The order comes in, our roaster sees the order. And this is another reason why we're kind of relegated to Shopify right now, because our connector is only working with Shopify. Eventually we got to get off platform. But our roaster sees that order and they're like, oh, great. Dan's ordering 2 more pounds of espresso. They're going to put that in the queue and roast it, bag it, and ship it out the same day. Sometimes it's actually better to wait a day or two because it still might be degassing.
Shut your mouth.
When you get it. Yeah. Yeah. 3 to 5 days is like ideal. So if the day that your coffee ships is the day it was roasted. And if you get it 2 days later, I would wait a day or two. Yeah, because you won't get full extraction. What happens is in that bloom, the CO2 builds up around the grinds.
Yeah.
And it'll actually slow down the extraction process and you'll end up with less flavor. So you want 3 to 5 days after roasting, you'll get that incredible bloom, which is really good. And it just makes for a great, great, great coffee experience. The downside is you can't run it through an espresso machine the day you get it, because it'll bloom inside the portafilter and junk up your espresso machine.
No way. Wow. Man, that is cool, man. If anybody's listening to this. Keep going.
Yeah, we got to shoot some videos. We got to shoot some videos to put up on the website, because I want to eventually make sure our customers are getting the best experience with their roasted to order coffee.
Yeah. Well, all I got to say is, if anybody is drinking Starbucks after hearing what you just described, then I don't think they're really a coffee drinker. I think that they are addicted to the stimulants within the coffee. They now need an intervention, in which case they can take a break. Lent's coming up. And then afterwards they can switch to pro-life coffee. That's what I think.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. The last thing I was going to say, and promo code Solomon. Promo code Solomon. By the way, is it case sensitive? I was just curious about that. Is it case sensitive?
I don't. The promo code? It's not. It shouldn't matter.
All right. I have Shopify too. I always put them
in caps so it's easier.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm a developer. And so 9 times out of 10, it's like, hey, we gave somebody the coupon and it didn't work. And it's like, well, let me check. Oh, yeah. Sure enough, the dude didn't change the case in the code. And so now it's looking for the exact string. Anyway. But Shopify doesn't do
that. We haven't experienced that yet.
Yeah. Well, that's because Shopify is a good product. And that's why conservatives need to get on the ball and understand they need to start making some good products. But the thing I was going to say, I did want to touch on just real quick, because we've got a couple minutes, you know, especially with the, you know, you were on what's that group called? It's like DW and Friends. Is that what
Daily Wire Friends? DW
Daily Friends. Wire, yeah. Friends. They're a new channel, right? Yeah. They just started like earlier this year, because I looked at them and I was like, oh, that's cool. They don't seem like they've been doing it for very long, but they've got a good following already. Have they been doing it for a while?
No. So I don't know if you follow Don't Vax Me.
Yes, I just started following him. Yeah, I think so. If not, I'll
follow. He hashtagged it one day. So there's this whole group of people that are in a couple different group chats. Abby Libby.
Yeah.
Myself. No Soup for Knowles.
I have a question about that account. No Soup for Knowles. I don't get the inside joke. I really want to know what it is. If you can't tell me because I'm not an initiate, then that's fine. Just let me know if I need to, you know. If I need to like do a blood pact.
Oh, I don't either. I just play along like I know.
That's gonna be like
it took me 3 months to ask my Twitter friends what base means. And I'm still trying to figure out ratio.
Yeah, exactly. I was asking the same thing. I was like, I don't get this.
I just go along with it.
Yeah. Anyway, what were you gonna say?
I was just gonna say, I think I understand ratioing.
So like there's a couple people who
there's a delay, Lindsay. You interrupted him.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. My wife will learn her place eventually.
No, I think I interrupted her.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, no. Just wait to see a flip-flop come across the camera.
Yeah, that's right. So you should check out, I'll send you our clip that we did where I, so Jeremy Borgen gave his response with to Crowder. And so we did like a mock of Lindsay's terms and conditions that was totally misogynistic. So, you know, I'll send it to you, but she didn't know what I had written. And so it was live on the air. And I said, we're going to go through your terms contract right here. And everybody got a kick out of it. So especially if they followed it at all, cause I was like trying to be like Jeremy Boring, you know, like, so, you know, a lot of you guys don't understand what we do here in the biz, you know, kind of a thing. And so anyway, it's pretty funny, but
that sounds awesome.
Yeah. So what were you going to say, Lindsay?
No. Don't.
Oh, you don't want
to
do.
Yeah, don't need to go backwards. But
you don't want a woman's playing the ratio?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm sure some, you know, Gen Z article will cover it just fine for anyone who doesn't know. Carry on.
Okay, so last two questions before you go. Maybe three.
Let's go for it. Lightning round.
What's the best way to brew coffee?
However it tastes best in your cup.
So you're a relativist when it comes to coffee.
I want people to buy and enjoy my coffee.
I am
a Jeremy Boring when it comes to coffee. I do scold my wife daily for microwaving and putting a ton of sugar and some sort of almond extracted chalk milk in her coffee.
Yes.
Not offended at all, but
that's right. Yeah, but you are what you eat, though. So you know, if you've got woke almond creamer, you know, you might just wake up one day with purple hair. That's what you need to tell her. You know, that's what Solomon's Corner said.
It's got to make sure she watches that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
I will say this: one of the best ways I've found for like extracting and really getting like the complexity of flavor out of a good bag of coffee is a vacuum pot.
A vacuum pot.
A vacuum maker. Yeah. So it's this weird mad scientist looking apparatus where it's got a, you boil the water in the bottom, it goes into the top chamber, you put your grinds in, you let the water boil for another minute, you take the flame away, and then it sucks it back down into the bottom as the air condenses or as the steam condenses and draws it through a filter. And it gives you like the cleanest cup of coffee that you can get. There's no oil because it all stays on top. And I just feel like you really get the, you could really taste the origin of, you know, what you're going for.
That is
so. A lot of time when I sample coffees and build our descriptions, I run them through multiple methods, but that one's always in there because that's where I really can kind of pick out, all right, this one's chocolatey or it's fruity or it's this or it's that.
Wow. So do you, just out of curiosity, do you do the ginger, like at sushi bars, you know how they tell you to eat the ginger so that it cleans the palate? Do you have a palate cleaning method, just out of curiosity?
Water.
There you go. I didn't know that.
Water's probably the most powerful solvent in nature.
There you go.
Works great for cleaning your palate.
There you go. You know, I'm a philosopher. I'm not a coffee roaster or a scientist. So that in these days, that means I don't know anything. So, you know, but that's okay. So the second thing was, I wanted you to touch on that Lauer Crowder comment you made on the Daily Wire and Friends about how people don't understand how advertising works for a small business or even a large business. When, you know, because Jeremy Boring brought out the term sheet and everybody, you know, even myself included, I was kind of like, oh, man, because I think there's a level at which none of us wants to admit that it's actually as bad as it is. You know, like we want to have this kind of purist view, like, oh, yeah, you know, when you get into this, you never have to make any compromises or whatever. And then, you know, if you have a mug like mine with the Teddy Roosevelt quote, that's like the man in the arena quote, if you're familiar with that, but it's like, you know, the critic isn't the one who matters, it's the man in the arena. You know, this really does seem to be that kind of situation where it's like, look, like we can all sit there and armchair quarterback these different groups. But even me, I said this on our episode that covered that whole thing. And I agreed with you. I thought Klavan was the best. Some of the other hosts, I think, actually made it worse. But the thing is that at the end of the day, you know, it is about like get into the fight and actually see how hard this is, because people came to us and were like, I can't believe you know, you can't use Shopify because, you know, like what if they. Yeah, well, like I'm trying to use this other one, but they want me to have like 2 years of sales or whatever it is. They wanted some sort of backlog and I'm just trying to get started. It's $30 a month, dude. I just got to get it up and I got to see if this is going to work. You know, like I got to see if you guys are going to put your money where your mouth is. Right. You know, like that's the thing is like, I'm going to sell this stuff. I need to see what people are going to do. And I think like what you said in the DW thing, because it's for those that don't know, it's like this round table format that where they're just kind of talking about Daily Wire stories. And this one happened to be the Daily Wire Lauer Crowder thing. And Rob, you had a really good point about advertising dollars. And from the advertiser's perspective, what you look for when you're actually going to advertise.
Yeah. So when we advertise, so first of all, advertising is, there's always tremendous risk and unknowns involved. And you're looking for, you know, we use the acronym ROI, return on investment.
Yep.
So when you're trying to determine where you're going to put your advertising money, it's what is this dollar that I'm spending going to actually bring back to my company. I need it to at least generate a one for one.
Yep.
A one for one as far as not revenue, but gross margin, right? Mm. Which is tough. And ideally I want it to generate a three for one, because if it's only doing one for one, it's not even worth going for.
Because you've also got time and effort into the campaign and like the infrastructure in order to capitalize on. That's what people don't understand. When you put an ad out there, you're saying, come into the store. And if your cash register doesn't work or you don't have the product or whatever it is, you just wasted money on your ads. But when you say gross margin, explain that to people who don't know. Myself.
Yeah. So you're, your gross, it's a percent. I'm not going to get into the formula, but you're,
yeah,
it's basically your profit. It's how you're defining your profit. So you have cost of goods sold, right? And let's just say I sell a $20 bag of coffee. I didn't make $20, right? If I'm operating at a 30% gross margin, I made like $6,
right?
Which is how most business operates. Yeah. Then out of that gross margin, you have other things. That's where your advertising dollars come from,
right?
So if I'm going to spend $100 in advertising and I'm making $6 per bag, right? That means that how many times is 6 into 100? Well, I should have went with 5 because then I could have just said it was 20. Then I need to sell 20 bags of coffee for that $100 in advertising in order to break even.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you were saying though, that like, you know, you got to make ROI and stuff. And we were talking about advertising to, like, if you're looking at a YouTuber like Ben Shapiro or Lateral Crowd or whatever, the things that you take into account, because you ultimately have to make it worth your investment. And just real sidebar, what people don't understand with ROI is it's just like the stock market. Like, you're putting money into something and you're hoping, the reason why you're doing that is not because you want to just merely support the organization. You're hoping that if they make money, you make money. And I think that's the best way to think about marketing. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. So when I look at somewhere that we're going to put advertising dollars, I'm making a decision based on information that they're giving me, right? So I'm not going to name drop, but I'm working on putting together some email and some digital marketing with a well-known satire site right now. And they're saying, hey, for X amount of dollars, you're going to reach this amount of people. And this is what we see typically happens with the ads, and they're showing us how many clicks they get. Obviously there's trust there.
Yeah.
But if I contract with them and then 3 days later, they're banned from their biggest vehicle for reaching their audience.
Right.
Now I'm stuck paying for a contract that is not even going to be close to the ROI that we talked about. And this is the situation with Crowder. And this is what people aren't realizing is Crowder seems to think that Jeremy's siding with big tech. When what Jeremy's saying is, hey, we need to absorb this risk together. I'm willing to take the risk, but you have to be willing to take the risk too. Crowder's not trying to become a Daily Wire employee.
Right.
He's coming on as a subcontractor. He has a corporation. He just announced Gerald as a CEO of Louder with Crowder.
Right.
Crowder's trying to run a business. And if he wants to play with other businesses, he needs to start looking at relationships that where there's mutually mitigated risk, not putting it all on one person. I'll add this too. You know, I get it. We don't like big tech. Mm-hmm. And I think that Crowder's argument about big tech is right. But if he's really that passionate, why doesn't he just divest from YouTube? If anybody can do it right now, it's him. Joe Rogan did 100%. It.
Yep.
And I think that's Crowder what would I be thought the too. Next one. If he were to say, yeah. So again, I'm not saying he's a hypocrite for not doing it, you know, but I just think he's missing a tremendous opportunity to really say, you know what? I'm done with YouTube. And honestly, if he did that, then he'd be able to even negotiate with these other companies without even having to worry about
that. And the thing that I think actually, I think he actually helped out the Daily Wire guys, because when Jeremy came forward and showed their business model, all of a sudden Project Veritas a couple weeks later drops this huge story on Pfizer, right? And everybody's like, you know, for me, I'm like, is Daily Wire going to cover it? Now, prior to this whole thing, we would have all been like, well, why aren't they covering it? You know, because like the day that it dropped, like none of the hosts did. I think Michael Knowles did. Not all of them did. But now there's this kind of a, what's that syndrome called, whether it's a, like a captive syndrome?
Oh, Stockholm.
Stockholm syndrome. There's like a Stockholm syndrome kind of effect where now we have sympathy on the fact that Daily Wire is actually trapped by this, by the big tech, but it's working, right? We see that they're actually having an impact. We see all this stuff. And so now if there's a big story that could hurt their bottom line that they don't cover, it's like, it's okay, Daily Wire. We got you. Like the Daily Wire army will take care of the spreading of this, because you covered it in your written stuff. We'll push that stuff out harder or whatever. Because again, if you adopt the narrative of war and you understand this idea of like, okay, again, metaphorically speaking, I want to be very clear, metaphor is that
we're not advocating violence.
That's right. And it's like, man, and nowadays people don't even know what a metaphor is. It's like, I think he told them to take the four and hit him in the meta. You know, it just gets out of hand. But point is that when you do that, that you suddenly could sit there and say, wow, all right, well, that's okay. And then Michael Knowles covers it on the next Monday and you're like, man, he's courageous, because I know that he's actually covering this at his expense. Right. And so I think it backfired on him personally. I was, you know, glad initially that he did it, because again, for during the pandemic and stuff, it did feel like to a certain extent, like you'd be telling somebody that you saw something and they'd be like, well, did Daily Wire cover it? And you'd be like, well, no, but I'm pretty sure it's 100% true. And you couldn't really figure it out. And even Ben said that he was like the most pro-vax guy on the right. So, I mean, like, there was just a lot of questions around some of this stuff, but because Crowder did it, you know, it's a very, I mean, I think that because of Jeremy Boring, the way he handled the whole thing, and then of course Crowder shot himself in the foot by making it, as Klavan said, a moral error. I just thought that the whole thing actually ended up working out in a net positive for them. I don't know if they, you know, lost a whole bunch of people, but either way, that's the story. And I really appreciate you giving that insight on what you thought on that, because again, you know, we're in this battle together. We're connected digitally and stuff, but we're all trying to fight this culture war. You know, Solomon's Corner is trying to do that, helping people get back to like a more classical form of viewing the world and understanding you don't need to go to college to do that. You can take responsibility for your own intellectual life and actually grow your mind outside of that. And you're doing it with the pro-life stuff. And so I'm just really glad that you came on the show. I know that you got to get into your driveway in like 10 minutes and bolt out for your next thing. Probably got to drink 16 cups of coffee for your next.
I just texted my wife. I'm just going to go. So I'm just going to get straight in the truck. So if you want to do one more question, I think squeeze it.
Okay. Well, the last question I was going to say, and you can try and answer this as fast as you want, but you said you're in seminary, right?
Yes.
Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yep.
You are? Okay. How has that influenced your view of business, like at all, like doing seminary versus, you know, doing business stuff?
So I originally started with an undergrad in theology. And then I ended up changing my cognant to Christian leadership, which was still a bachelor's in theology, but we really started taking more leadership, how to lead in the church type classes, which was with Liberty University, which I'm going to plug them there. It's an awesome school. Their online program is really good. Their mission statement is training up champions for Christ. And it's what they're doing, whether it's to go into a marketplace role, they really just thread that in with their coursework is what does it mean to be a Christian in this area? So then my master's, which I'll be finishing up here in a few months, is in, master's in Christian ministry, which is also a leadership focused degree.
Yeah.
So for me, the way that seminary has influenced me in business is, back in 2016, when I first started, it forced me to start reading my Bible and to start reading it seriously, because I had to engage with the material. So that was it actually really started to alter my worldview and change how I looked at the world and change how I thought business should look. That being said, I think we need to, and I'm stealing off of another author right now, but I think we need to abandon this idea of church parachurch. Mm-hmm. There's no parachurch in the New Testament. Period. There's not.
Right.
I think that as Christians, and Eric Metaxas and even Mike Lindell, they've both influenced me in this area. They talk about being missional in the marketplace.
Yep.
First time I saw Mike Lindell or heard Mike Lindell, I'm not a big fan of his, but I have respect for him, was on the Hannity show back in 2018. He was given 20 minutes to plug MyPillow, and all he did was preach the gospel for 20 minutes. And and Sean keeps saying, yeah, but what about MyPillow? And he's like, no, it's Jesus.
Yeah. So
I was like, man, this is what marketplace ministry needs to look like. It needs to be kingdom minded. So that being said, my studies have forced me to be disciplined in engaging with the Word of God, which naturally changes your life. Just reading the Bible has a great impact on us.
Yes, it does.
And I think that's the biggest way. And then on top of that, just the excellence that I've been able to pursue school has carried over into the marketplace as well, as to where I just want to do things right. I want to honor God with my efforts. I want to make sure that the T's are dotted and the I's are crossed and all that good stuff. So,
yeah. Well, I'm really excited that North Arrow exists. I'm very excited that I have a coffee company that now supports my values, and I hope that you guys continue to see great success in the future. Where can people follow you? I know on Twitter and Instagram and all those places, but what's the the at thing.
Yeah, so all channels at North Arrow Coffee, except for Twitter, it's at ProLife Coffee. And then my personal ats are Rob Mitt. And they're all linked. Everything's cross-linked. So if you, you know, if you want hot takes, follow us on Twitter. That's very much my personality there. If you're looking for just general marketing, that's Instagram. It's a little more yeah. polished.
If you're looking for a beautiful cold brew, exciting. Go to Instagram. If you're looking for fluffy, fun stuff, go to the Instagram and drink your coffee yeah. and feel warm and fuzzy. If you're looking to fight the culture war, get on Twitter. Follow at ProLife Coffee or at Thomistic Dan. And we'll see you guys next time.
Yeah.
I'm Daniel Roberts. Thanks, Rob, for coming on. And to everybody else, don't forget, keep thinking.